where the buzz is always about great service. And our studio today is Hermitage Golf Course. We're live out here at the NFL Alumni Tennessee Chapter Charity Golf Tournament, benefiting various charities across the Tennessee and Middle Tennessee areas. Happy to be out here. Mm-hmm. Always a blast to be out here at the NFL Alumni Golf Tournament. Willie D. D. Mays, happy Thursday. How are you doing?
Hey, happy Thursday. I'm doing well. Somebody turned up the heat and turned off the air. I know that.
For real. Yeah.
They say, oh, they're going to be out at Hermitage today? All right, let's turn up the heat a little bit. And by the way, turn off that fan over there.
Turn off the fan. Turn up the humidity.
Exactly.
Let's make things as uncomfortable as possible.
Absolutely. But it's a beautiful day out
here.
It
is a beautiful day.
And we're sitting underneath their pavilion. And it's kind of cool here. The wind's blowing a little bit.
Keep that breeze going. We'll be
keep
okay.
Keep that breeze, yeah. Keep those
I might
fans
be creeping
going.
A little closer to you as the sun gets it this way.
Hey, Willie,
and the shade starts creeping this way.
Why do you think I didn't sit over there?
Yeah, you know what? I got bamboozled into the side of the table that has as much sun exposure as you can get. And yeah. I learned that the hard way, that half of my black plastic chair was half in the sun.
It's
and
like
I've already burned the back
degrees.
Of my legs. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. But hot or not, still happy to be out here at Hermitage Golf Course. I was hoping to see some goats.
It's kind of chilly
well,
in the studio.
On the other side,
are they goats or are they sheep?
Yeah. Sheep, goats.
Whatever they are.
The sheep. They definitely have the sheep.
The sheep.
Yeah.
They might have some goats. I saw a lot of little furry creatures at our charity golf tournament last year.
Here?
Squirrels. Yeah, they got a lot of wildlife. A lot of birds.
Yeah, I think I saw an
Pretty
alligator,
cool.
too.
You did?
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, if you saw an alligator up here, that's news.
An anaconda. Maybe a couple of primates here and there. You never know what you're going to get.
I saw a T-Rex.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A couple of pterodactyls flying around.
I'll tell
around.
You that. Speaking of these animals, D-Mace, I think it's everybody could watch this. I saw on Netflix... Me, who grew up in the 80s, It was a documentary they did on making the USA for Africa, We All Are the World
Oh, I
video.
Saw that, yes.
Did you watch that?
Yes.
I thought that was really good. I had never heard of it or anything.
Yeah.
I saw it. I was like, okay, I'll watch this. Maybe I'll watch the first few minutes, see if I like it. I was riveted with it. But one of the stories with the animals is Lionel Richie went to Michael Jackson's place to write the song. And he said, while they were writing the song, he said he looked over his shoulder. There was a big snake coming out of the records.
Oh, my gosh.
And Michael Jackson's like, oh, there's my snake. I haven't seen him in a while. He likes you, Lionel.
I tailed it out of there so quickly.
I would have said, keep all my stuff. I'm leaving it here. I'm sprinting home.
You know what? You can have the masters. I'm gone. Whatever we were writing, you can have it. I'm gone.
I won't take the credit for the song. I'll just show up and sing. Just put together what you want.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah that is where I draw the line. Like, with a bugaboo, is a snake or a lizard or anything with scales, I'm good.
Yeah, but if you remember that, of course, we all got sick of the song after a while. It was so enormous at the time. It took over, and you're like, oh, my God, they're playing it again.
We are the world.
Yeah. But to watch all of the top talent come together like they did, and I didn't realize they had to do it in one night. That's part of the story is they were there for the American Music Awards. That's the only reason they could get that many people in one place at one time.
Yeah.
And they had to do it overnight after the American Music Awards show was over. Imagine that. Like, you've already been through that whole day. Lionel Richie was hosting the show and winning a lot of awards. Then he had to go do all of that. But they captured it all. And all of those people, it was really cool. It was like a team coming together, like a team of super friends. All.
That's the last time it's happened, too.
Nobody's done anything like that since, right?
Nobody's done anything like that. I don't think so. Not to my knowledge. So
it's on Netflix.
Yeah,
it's called
check it out.
The Greatest Night in Pop, I think is what it's called.
It's kind of like what today
it's a thumbs
is.
Up. Gives it a thumbs
just
up.
Just a who's who
NFL
alumni
coming together. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In the Tennessee
all
area.
All you got to do is write a song, D-Mace, and then we'll get a video.
Yeah. We got about 30 people here. We'll just write the song now.
Yeah, easy peasy. No problem. All right, well, let's get
no
into
snakes.
It. No snakes. We'll take goats or sheep or whatever. No snakes. Let's get into it because, you know, with the new regime of the coaching staff, we grew over the years, I believe, fluent in what we called Vrabelese, that we knew how to interpret what Mike Vrabel was saying. We're all still in Callahan's 101. Mm-hmm. We're still learning Brian Callahan. We're still learning kind of how he interacts with the media. And I think, just from my perspective, so far, so good. I liked everything that I've heard from Brian Callahan and his interactions with the media, but we're learning him and... Is there a hidden meaning there? What does he mean by that? And we'll obviously, you know, as the season continues, learn more and more Callahanese as we go along. I think there's also another language that at least D-Mace is fluent in. Something that we can call wide receiveries.
Yes.
So maybe the hidden language or the translation for what wide receivers might say. So Tyler Boyd was on SiriusXM NFL Radio earlier this week, kind of talked about all things, you know, coming back with Brian Callahan after being with him in Cincinnati, Will Levis, just the transition from Cincinnati to Tennessee, how things are shaping up throughout the offseason for the Tennessee Titans. So I think we should bring out our wide receiver translator, kind of break down maybe exactly what Tyler Boyd is saying here from D-Mace's perspective mm-hmm. of being there, being a veteran wide receiver, being in a stacked wide receiver room, even working with a young and rookie quarterback. Obviously, Will Levis isn't a rookie quarterback, but a young and inexperienced quarterback. So this was what Tyler Boyd had to say on SiriusXM NFL Radio earlier this week.
You know, I know he could take hits, and he's an athlete. You know, he's kind of tall. But, again, man, I know he can go out there and play football. And another thing, I know he kind of probably went out there and did too much. But now he got playmakers. He got guys. So I think he can cut it back a little bit, relax, and just rely more on his playmakers, you know. But at the end of the day, he's still learning the offense as well, you know. So he's still trying to get the timing with certain routes and just knowing what side to stay with and what not to stay with and just get the ball out in timing.
Well, okay.
So let's put that in our wide receiver
okay.
translator.
Vernacular. Okay, let me put it in. All right, I got it.
I had a wide receiver sounder.
Yeah,
I had a translator sounder that I've been working on all morning.
Go ahead. Let me see it. Let me hear it.
Well, I edited it. I put it on the end of that clip. Wait, one more time.
Wide receiver translator.
I was so proud of that.
I like it. I
thank
like
you,
it.
Nick.
You're
I
welcome.
Like that.
Initially,
I like
Caroline,
it,
when I got the clip, I was like, is there something wrong with the computer?
Yeah,
or
we're
is that
keep that one. Caroline, we're keeping that one.
The standing property house. Of the station.
Yeah. Yeah. Property of the station. We like that one. No, and when I listened to it, Caroline and Willie, it reminded me of yesterday when we briefly talked about Derrick Henry and what Derrick Henry said. And was it a dig at the Titans, or was it just Derrick Henry just, you know, talking more so about Baltimore and their quarterback? Well, both of these seem to go together. And hang with me for a quick second here. Tyler Boyd was on the Cincinnati Bengals. Didn't know anything about Will Levis. He only scouted the defense. He wasn't looking at Tennessee's offense, so he didn't know for the most part. But he says in there they didn't have the weapons last year. What did Derrick Henry say? What did Derrick Henry say? Man, it feels good to not be the main man
right.
that everybody's looking at. Those two different guys, one on Cincinnati, one was here. They hadn't talked to each other, at least I don't think they have. But they seem to have the same sort of thought
perception.
Pattern. Yeah,
perception
of the Titans. Yeah. Yes, of the Titans. So, and their offense. Let's just say their offense. So, that's first, is that he and Derrick Henry sort of saw the offense the same way.
Low on weaponry.
Exactly, low on weaponry. And then two.
Translation, they kind of stank.
Yeah, they
how often do we say it? Yeah. They move some stuff around, but the last 2 years it's been 17.
Duct tape and barbed wire.
It's been brutal.
Duct tape and barbed wire. That's what it has been. But then he starts to talk about his sort of physical abilities. It tells me he's still learning Will Levis. He doesn't know Will Levis personally. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know much about his game, and he shouldn't, because he would, when they played the Titans, he scouted their defense. He didn't scout their offense, so he doesn't know too much about Will Levis other than what he's probably seen a little bit of, and that he was the quarterback of the Tennessee Titans last year. He doesn't know much about Will Levis, so his answer comes off as he's he's sort of looking for things nice to say about Will Levis, things that are sort of obvious, strong arm, tough, stuff like that. But he
said he's tall.
Yeah, he's tall. Yeah, that's like, yeah, well, she's cute.
She's
she
nice.
Has a good personality. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But that tells me, again, he's still getting to know Will Levis.
Uh-huh.
He's still getting to know him in this offense, what type of player he is, what type of leader he's going to be. I don't think it was a dig or anything of Will Levis, but he just doesn't
know. It's kind of a wait and see.
Yeah, it was just like he didn't want to sit there and say, you know, he didn't want to, you know, pump up his tires and oh, he's this and he's that.
False
and
bravado.
We would be looking at him like, well, y'all only spent a couple of days together. How do you know all this? So he gave an honest assessment without getting too deep. Well, he didn't go nowhere near the weeds. He stayed on the surface. But he gave things on the surface that we all can look at and be like, yeah, I can see what he's talking about. But when you're talking about going in depth about his game, he doesn't know yet. Mm-hmm. And that's cool. Because you just got here. Hopefully, once you come back from camp and once y'all get in camp and that question is asked of you again once camp is done, hopefully you're better able to explain how he's gotten better, who he is as a quarterback. But right now it's hard for him. And that's like asking Calvin Ridley, what do you think about Will? He's going to give you surface stuff, you know, and that's what you expect right now.
What did you make of him? Because one thing that stood out to me is when Tyler Boyd said, you know, he's not going to have to force it.
Yeah.
He's not going to have to force the ball.
But what did we talk about last year during the season? What did I say last year? I said he's starting to develop bad habits. Why? Because the offensive line in front of him, he's getting jittery with the ball. He's getting happy feet. He's trying to make
throws.
He's
not being put in good situations.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. He's not. He's trying to make throws because he feels that if I don't throw it now, I'm going to be sacked. You know?
Yeah.
He's trying to make plays.
It's two bad choices.
Exactly.
Either I eat it and get smoked here and take the sack, or I try to make a tough throw.
Exactly.
Under pressure, or I got to let it go before I want to let it go, and I risk throwing an interception. Numbers are bad. And at the end of the day, you get the numbers that you get.
Exactly.
And
so I think that's what he was alluding to when he said the throws, because Will Levis, no fault of his own, but when you're in a situation like that where the offensive line is not good, you're going to start developing bad habits that you are going to have to then break the next off season.
Yeah. I think another part of that is, what have we heard as another theme, trying to weed through, you know, I heard Jared really go off yesterday on a theme, and he's been doing this of, you know, everything's very positive right now coming from the team, right? This is, you know, they're trying to really create part of the culture, I think, within the walls by being pretty positive with their public comments, right?
Yeah.
That's fair. But, you know, you try to read through that and say, you know, what's usable here? What's notable of what you're hearing? And one thing I hear, and it matches up with our eye test, is that Will Levis can use the whole field throwing, right? He's got – one of his strengths is he's got an arm where he can throw the ball a long way, high velocity. He can make you cover the whole width of the field, the whole length of the field. But to do that and take advantage of that, what do you need? You need time. You need to be able to sit back there and let receivers get down the field, get wide and get deep to take advantage. And if you can't protect, then it doesn't matter how good you're, because the ball's got to be out. So I think what I heard Boyd say, if I could boil it down to, is if we can put this guy in positions to succeed, we feel like, the you know, with his addition, Ridley's addition, that they'll have more ways to they can spread the ball around and avoid getting in some really bad situations. Of course, this is all predicated on having better offensive line play.
It's the way that I interpreted it was Tyler Boyd's way of saying, like, we got you. Like, last year, you didn't have a lot of protection. You had D-Hop, and that was really your only reliable pass catcher. You didn't have time. You were under pressure. The ball had to come out quick, because if it didn't, Will Levis was going to probably get sacked and probably, you know, risk a fumble. Will Levis just didn't really have a lot to work with. So saying, like, look, you're not going to have to force the ball anymore, because we've got you. We don't have to force it in tight windows or in uncomfortable situations or toss up a 50-50 ball and just say, hopefully DeAndre Hopkins comes down with it, because now you got me, you got Calvin Ridley, and you've got D-Hop. Like,
Hopefully a good running game. That's key, right? And it will be different without Derrick Henry, as we've been saying. But hopefully it's enough to balance things out. That's what you hope that this offense can be. They've put some money into this.
Yeah.
They got a lot of new pieces. And it's got to come together sooner than later, right? Mm-hmm. You got to be realistic. It may not be perfect on day one. But to hope the net result is at the end of the year, you're not saying 17.8 points per game.
Well, yeah, we got to move up. They're going to have to up that point, Annie.
Yeah.
it's been in the 17s for two years too long. And we will not know exactly what this offense can or will be until we really get into the season.
Right.
They're going to have their ups and downs, especially at the beginning of the year, because it's new to everybody. But you hope that as he starts to get acclimated with these receivers, these new receivers, that this offense will continue to take steps forward as the season goes on. But, I mean, if you're looking for this team with all of these new pieces to go out there and hit the ground running, it's not going to happen.
So Tyler Boyd also continued along. He was on SiriusXM NFL Radio earlier this week. Talked about, you know, being in this wide receiver room, being with Calvin Ridley and DeAndre Hopkins, and really a wide receiver room that seems to be pretty stacked. This was Tyler Boyd on SiriusXM NFL Radio.
Coming here with Ridley and Hopman, I'm kind of familiar with being in a room full of playmakers, you know, guys that just can go out there and just flat out play. You know, but I think the most important thing for the whole group is just being unselfish. You know, guys just making it more family thing and not just being selfish, man. And I think once we bond and get that chemistry, I think things will just go so much smoother.
Wide receiver translator.
So we'll plug that in our wide receiver translator.
I like that.
Thank you.
You know, it's for one, he does understand what, you know, a top flight wide receiver room looked like. He was a part of one. T. Higgins, obviously, Chase, and then himself. Had the tight end a couple years ago. So he understands what a receiver room with flat-out players looks like. But the problem sort of here is, yeah, those guys were young. They're all in their 20s, you know, early 20s. And these are guys that are hitting their strides in the room that you were in. You were the senior guy in the room. But now you come into a receiver room where, you know, all y'all guys are approaching 30. If not 30 already, this is not the young, youthful wide receiver room that you had in Cincinnati. Now, listen, they got the talent. The receiver room got the talent led by D-Hop. But as my concerns have been always, how long can these guys all play together this season? There are going to be games missed as the season goes on. Guys get tired. You start to get worn down. How will this receiving core look in week 9, 10, and 11? Because that's where they're going to have to pick up their game is toward the latter part of the season, because that's when I believe the offense will really, if they're going to show anything, it's going to be then when they really show how good they are. So,
and there's two parts of that in my mind. It's, can you make a charge and have a good season and maybe be in the race the last month? Like, if you can really get it to come together down the stretch. But also, which direction are you going? How do you want to build your roster to be better next year? Because that's really what you're looking at. This is a rebuild. So you're hoping to have something built on a foundation that you can take to another level the following season. And, you know, with veteran guys, it's not a given that all those guys are going to be back. So it needs to come together, right? You can't say, Ridley wasn't real good this year, but it'll be better next year. Like, you really want to build that foundation, especially with him, because he's a guy you've invested not long-term, but longer-term than Boyd and Hopkins at this point.
And a lot of money.
You need a return on investment.
Ridley. Yeah, absolutely. And hearing Tyler Boyd say that, like, look, I've been in a stacked receiver room. I think that Cincinnati was the best receiver room in the NFL last year and might still be the best receiver room in the NFL even without Tyler Boyd. And him saying, look, we're just going to have to be unselfish. That's I interpret that as Tyler Boyd saying, look, I'm just here to help. I don't need 20 targets a game. You know, I don't need a 1,500-yard season. Like, I understand my role within this offense, and I understand that some games that might mean a whole lot of touches and a whole lot of catches and a whole lot of action for me. Some games, that might mean that the ball goes elsewhere. Now, that is understanding that he's saying that in June. Mm-hmm. In October, if Tyler Boyd's not getting a lot of targets and the Titans aren't playing very well and you're losing games, maybe the tone changes a little bit of, you're not giving me the ball and we're not winning games. Like, what gives? Something's going to have to change. But at least
then we're
going
to have to go back to the wide receiver translator.
Exactly.
Which is a good thing.
There could be some interesting quotes coming out of there.
Oh, yeah.
D-Mace will have to read between the lines.
There's once never been a more cryptic position in football than the wide receivers.
So the wide receiver translator.
That is our wide receiver translator.
I take it.
I know you'll continue to use it throughout the season.
We're now going to have a recurring theme over the summer. Anytime somebody says something,
wide receiver translator.
Yeah.
One of my favorite tweets of all time is, you know, it's tweets per position in football. Wow. Quarterback, great team win today. Good job, guys. Running back, you know, putting in that work. Tight end, derp. Wide receivers, my enemy moves slowly with a knife. Like, so cryptic. That's what you need.
Hey, we can't say
the
too
wide
much.
Receiver
we
translator.
We got to keep it. We got to keep it bland.
It's stealthy.
Exactly.
Awfully stealthy. So speaking of wide receivers, I know D-Mace and I can speak for us. I don't know about Willie as much, but we love a good conspiracy theory. And Jared yesterday had a conspiracy theory as far as one Titans wide receiver is concerned. So we'll get into that coming up next. And, of course, we'll get into your phones. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline Willie D. May is live out here at Hermitage Golf Course for the NFL Alumni Charity Golf Tournament. Caroline Willie D. Mace. We're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Caroline Willie D. Mace. Hey, you can purchase your tickets right now for the Music City Grand Prix at the Nashville Super Speedway Friday, September 13th through 15th at MusicCityGP.com. As the race and station, 102.5 The Game has a special offer that is only for a limited time. You can use the promo code GAME, G-A-M-E, for a 20% discount now through June 16th. We're live out here at Hermitage Golf Course for the NFL Alumni Charity Golf Tournament. Happy to be out here, of course. A little bit of news that came out earlier this morning. The Falcons have been, you know, kind of docked a fifth-round pick in the 2025 draft, so the upcoming draft, and they'll be fined. The Falcons and general manager Terry Fontenot will be fined for tampering on Kirk Cousins, Darnell Mooney, and Charlie Warner. I don't know.
Not sure who Charlie is.
Don't know who that is.
Like a running back.
Doesn't really sound like the kind of player that you need to tamper with. But most notably, Kirk Cousins and Darnell Mooney. I will tell you what, ever since the Falcons, it has felt like it's been misstep after confusing move after misstep when they were very publicly flirting with Deshaun Watson when Matt Ryan was in the fold, and Matt Ryan got really upset about it, and that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back with that relationship. And then they commit all of that money to Kirk Cousins and then turn around and take Michael Penix Jr. with a top 10 pick before Kirk Cousins has even taken a snap in a Falcons uniform. So, and then just another, you know, kind of chapter in the saga with the Falcons. It's a fifth-round pick and a $250,000 fine. Like, it's kind of a slap on the wrist, but just yet another
but
thing
it's something.
That the Falcons
no, I mean,
are dealing with.
It's not what you need at this point if you're the Falcons. But you could wind it back a little further, too, with they let Matt Ryan go with a lot of dead money on the contract. Arthur Smith comes in. They draft Desmond Ridder. And they pull the plug on that after a fairly short amount of time where, if you look back on it, from what I've read and heard, that it limited what they could do for a couple of years. The Matt Ryan, all the dead money on that.
There was a lot of it. Goodness.
Yeah. So just the quarterback transition from Ryan to whoever is going to be the guy, you know, I guess Cousins is the guy. How long? I mean, he's getting up there in age. They're certainly paying him so that you would think it's more than a one-year fix. Right, and then Penix already is in his mid-20s. It's just a weird timeline And I would love to have a private conversation with Arthur Smith about all that he has taken away from that experience there, because it doesn't look like it's a smooth flow right now.
And all the talent that they have, mm-hmm. Bijan Robinson and Drake London and Kyle Pitts at tight end, like, they've got talent offensively. It kind of just looked like they were a quarterback away. They bring the quarterback into the fold and then make the confusing pick of Michael Penix. Just all the way around, just kind of an odd situation going down there in Atlanta. So,
where is Arthur Smith, by the way? Where does he
land
somewhere?
He's in Pittsburgh.
OC in Pittsburgh.
Yep. Okay.
Yep. Which is a massive upgrade from Matt Canada. Mm-hmm. I'm not a Matt Canada fan.
Now we'll see what he can do with their situation to quarterback, which is free flowing, right? It is a new chapter.
Free flowing is a really nice way to put it, Willie. It's I don't know the right word to use.
It will not
between
be dull.
Russell Wilson and Justin Fields.
It will not be dull.
Circus maybe is a better a word to use. So again, a little bit of breaking news coming out earlier this morning. The Falcons docked a fifth round pick and will be fined $250,000 for tampering with Kirk Cousins and Darnell Mooney. Okay, so I said that Jared has a conspiracy theory, and whenever Jared has a conspiracy theory, I think, okay, I got to buckle up a little bit. We had Trevor Maddich on the show yesterday to talk about his comments that he made on Jared's show a couple of weeks ago. We talked about Treylon Burks' effort, how he was disgusted by Treylon Burks' effort, said, hey, I would have cut him today. Obviously, D-Mace, you had some feelings about that. So we had Trevor Maddich on the show, kind of went back and forth about what Trevor saw from your experience, D-Mace, as a wide receiver. And Jared talked about that on his show yesterday, kind of a recap of our conversation on our show yesterday. And Jared thought, man, there's a whole lot of positive talk about Treylon Burks coming out from the Titans. You know, Brian Callahan talking about how he ran however many miles in one day in practice, and Tyke Tolbert talking about how great his effort has been and how much they admire what Treylon Burks has done. Nick Holt's offensive coordinator has reiterated that as well. So Jared had a conspiracy theory about where all of that positive conversation is coming from. This was Jared on his show yesterday.
So we've got a little bit of a conspiracy theory here, and that is the Titans' actions have told us they don't believe in Treylon Burks. You don't spend $50 million for a receiver and then go bring in another receiver, all while hoping that you're going to get one of the two receivers at the top of the draft board. You don't do that if you think you've got a guy in Treylon Burks. I mean, last year, it was like pulling teeth to get them to go after a receiver. And they got lucky that DeAndre Hopkins fell in their lap and they were able to cheap their way to him. And that not one other team thought, you know what, we could use DeAndre Hopkins and paid him a boatload of money. But they believed in Burks last year. This year they don't. And so we talk about the fibbing, because I think that when Brian Callahan talks about this great role that he expects Treylon Burks to have, I don't believe in that. I mean, I think about all the guys they're going to want to throw the ball to before they're going to want to throw the ball to Treylon Burks. Again, I have a hard time really thinking that he's telling the truth. But it does them no good to say he's got bad effort. If they think that he doesn't really love football, or they think that he doesn't have the it factor inside of him, or any of these things, it doesn't do them any good. But it does do them good if people think that Treylon Burks is actually salvageable. Like, if there's a belief around the league that, hey, you know, Burks, he was a former first round pick, and you know, Burks, he could make a difference. And because he had 16 catches last year, that's terrible. But at some point in time, as training camp continues, there is going to be a team that looks at their roster and says, holy crap, we don't have any receivers, like the Chargers. Some team is going to look at themselves. Somebody might get hurt. Somebody might look at their team and say, oh my God, we don't have any receivers. We got to do something.
It is awfully windy and loud out here at the NFL Alumni Golf Tournament. But essentially, that was what Jared said there, was all of the positive talk surrounding Treylon Burks coming out from Callahan and Tolbert and Nick Holtz and all of the Titans coaches is because the Titans are planning on, or at least they're maintaining Treylon Burks' trade value and publicly talking about how great Treylon Burks is, so he has good value on the trade market. That's Jared's conspiracy theory. What do we think about it?
I don't think it's some conspiracy theory. I don't think they're in the building like, ooh, all sitting at the round table saying, oh, how can we make Treylon Burks more attractive to other teams? How can we do it? Oh, we're going to say nice things about him. We're going to say all these things that he's not, but we're gonna say he is, or we're going to hype it up even more so that if that day comes, a team will look back at what we said and say, let's make a trade for that guy. Let's make a trade. That doesn't happen. They want to make sure he's in a good headspace. That's what they want to make sure they do with Treylon. Because if they go out there and they bash him or do anything else, it's not going to put him in a state where he's going to be giving it his best.
Yeah.
They want to make sure that when he comes into this building, he's in the best headspace he can possibly be. They understand what's in front of him. He understands what's in front of him. It's not like they are doing this or saying all this, again, to make sure that when other teams, or if other teams do call, then they will call about Treylon because of what we've been saying about him. No, what they're going to do is turn on the film if they want to know. He's going to turn on the film. Mm-hmm. And they're going to say, do we still have it? Doesn't he? You know, is it good for us to make a trade? Now, if they're willing to give up a six-round pick, it don't matter what you said about Treylon Burks. It's a sixth or seventh round pick. They don't care. They're just taking a flyer on a guy with potential.
Jared.
And that's the way the Titans did. They see Treylon with a bunch of potential. He has probably the most potential in that room. They see that, and they're trying to figure out how to get the best out of him. It does them no good to put him in a bad headspace. Mm-hmm. Say all these good things about him, which he is doing. Hype it up, but it's not to make him attractive for everybody else. It's to make sure that we get the best out of him so we can truly evaluate whether he's going to be a part of our plans or he's not. It has nothing to do with other teams.
I think, Jared, my conspiracy theory is the Braves have played so poorly that he's not watching the Braves anymore because Strider's hurt. And, you know, they got some other injury problems. Acuna's out, you know, so he's really, really stretching for material here. Let's take this theory through that he thinks the Titans are really getting together each morning and saying, okay, what are we going to say positive about Treylon today? Operation Treylon. Like, this is a new staff that's coming in a rebuild that is trying to fix a broken team. It's a new era, new quarterback, moving on from Derrick Henry. This is a reset with a big, big mountain to climb. If they're plotting and using resources and time and energy to trade Treylon Burks, that is not a smart way to rebuild this team. Because have we not gone through and looked around and saw an article about just what it would take to trade Treylon Burks? You would have to pay the other team money to get a sixth-round pick back.
In next year's draft.
So you would be putting a lot of resources and time and energy together to get a sixth-rounder and pay the other team.
Yeah.
Pick up part of the tab. So I'm just going to shoot down the theory.
I'm with you. I don't think that this is a plan.
There's no plan. That's what Derek said. You're just hoping the guy has the light go on in year three. End of story. And if he doesn't, as Jared pointed out, they have started to move forward as if he's not going to pan out. All of their actions tell you they're hedging their bets at least, at the very best.
Yeah.
They are making it tougher for him to get in there. He's going to have to push his way in there, which is what they should do. Mm-hmm. He has not performed very well. So if they're not, so I think that's really the message. It's not more complicated. But Jared, because it's June and the Braves are stinking it out, he's got to come up with something to talk about. So he's thinking around. He's thinking too much.
I don't think that this is something that Brian Callahan and Tyke Tolbert and Nick Holtz and Rand Carthon sat around a table and kind of rubbed their hands together and thought, Operation getting the hell out of here. I don't think they're doing that. I think that the public, maybe praise isn't the right word, but public compliments about Burks and his work ethic are nothing other than to just say, hey, Treylon's our guy and we believe in him. And Trevor said this on our show yesterday, and whether you agree with it or not, I can see this being the case where Trevor said this doesn't seem like the kind of coaching staff that's going to come out and rip a player just for the sake of ripping a player. Mm-hmm. This seems like the kind of coaching staff that doesn't really want to publicly rock the boat. If they need to have tough conversations with Treylon Burks about his work ethic behind closed doors, I would like to think I would hope at least that they're going to have those conversations behind closed doors. But so I don't think that this is some master plan to trade Treylon Burks away. But I will say this. I'm not opposed to the Titans trading Treylon Burks if the right offer comes along. That at the trade deadline, there is a team. Jared mentions the Chargers. I think that's a team when you think about wide receiver needy teams. That's one that comes to mind since Jim Harbaugh views offensive linemen as skill position players. I think the Chiefs could be another one that could be in on the wide receiver market at the trade deadline. That if one of those teams is desperate and is willing to maybe, quote-unquote, overpay for Treylon Burks, and you look at it and you think, I just don't see a future for this guy within our organization, I would not be opposed to a trade like that. But what I would be opposed to is trading Treylon Burks away just to get rid of him in exchange for a 2026 sixth-round pick that Bill Barnwell said would be a fair trade with the Steelers. I'm not interested in that.
If the right buyer comes along, the wide receiver translation is he has no trade value.
Yeah, but at this point, he has no trade value. Yeah.
He doesn't. He hasn't done anything. So he hasn't proven anything. He hasn't been able
away
to stay
for
healthy.
A sixth-round pick or a seventh-round pick. I just keep him myself.
Yeah. There's a better chance that he does come around and give you something because he does have a unique skill set.
Exactly.
If you could ever bring it out of him, and they're using whatever methods they feel like are the best ways to do it. But at the same time, as Jared has pointed out repeatedly, he caught 16 passes last year. So you can't sit there and say, let's put all our eggs in this,
right?
Because that wouldn't be smart. But you have to kind of leave a little space and say, maybe the light goes on. This is a new staff. Whatever they get from him is gravy. They can always look back and say, we didn't draft him. We didn't make that move. We didn't trade for him. Or we didn't trade for that first pick to draft him. He's whatever we got, we got. We'll see. If not, we move on. We inherited this problem.
I'm in no rush to move on from Treylon Burks. But if the right caller calls, you pick up the phone, and you have to evaluate it.
Oh, of course. Of course. If it makes sense. And to me, if it's not a fifth-round pick or better, which I don't think they will get, then it doesn't make sense to me. It really doesn't.
If someone is silly enough to trade you a second-round pick for Treylon Burks, I'd do it today.
Exactly.
I would do it today.
That's what they want to do.
But that's not going to happen.
Exactly. Nobody's going to drive up to this course and say, Willie, we really need you on our scramble team because you are such a great golfer. It's just not going to happen.
Really not.
I can say it might happen.
Especially
if it happened, I might say, okay, I guess so. But it's not going to happen.
And then I will say, no, you don't want Willie because Willie duct taped his shoes, so you don't want Willie.
I forgot about that. We were sitting right here. Did you get a new pair of shoes, Willie?
I was shamed into walking to the pro shop and buying a new pair, which I'll unveil next week at our golf tournament.
Okay.
Shiny new shoes.
I'll bring it on back.
Duct tape free.
Yep.
All right, 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get into some of your wide receiver thoughts, what Tyler Boyd had to say on SiriusXM NFL Radio, and, of course, not just what he had to say, but what our wide receiver translator translated him to say, Jared's conspiracy theory on Treylon Burks. Plus, coming up next, is the NBA in trouble after what we saw last night? We'll get into that coming up next before we catch up with Jonathan Hutton at noon. Caroline Willie D. Mace, 1025-1063 The Game.
I thought it was perfect that Luka fell onto the ground there in an unacceptable position to put himself in with 4 minutes left with five fouls, and then immediately looks at the bench and says, you better bleeping challenge it, as if it's the bench's fault that he just made a terrible play. I'm standing here in the Mavericks tunnel. Over there is the Celtics tunnel. That's where the winners are. If Luka's ever going to be a winner coming out of this tunnel here, he is going to have to use this what's happened in this finals as a learning experience. His defensive performance is unacceptable. He is a hole on the court. The Celtics are attacking him. They are ahead in this series because they have attacked him defensively. And you've got a situation here where Luka is complaining about the officiating. They have begged him. They have talked with him. They have pleaded with him. He is costing his team because of how he treats the officials. He's a brilliant player. He does so many things well. They are here because of how he did. His performance in this game is unacceptable and the reason why the Mavericks are not going to win. He's got to get over this. And the fact that he came out after the game and blamed the officials showed me he's nowhere close yet. So maybe over the summer somebody will get to him because nobody with the Mavericks or anybody else in his life has. And that's where the Mavericks are at this point. They're never going to get to this tunnel with the trophy if he doesn't improve those aspects of his game.
Brian Windhorst last night on SVP.
I'm feeling the heat. It's not just the 92-degree weather here.
Did not mince many words about Luka Doncic last night. My goodness, was just piling it on him. But I will say,
He's not wrong.
He's not wrong, and Doncic is deserving of those comments. My goodness. I mean, Celtics take game three last night. So Celtics are now up 3-0. Fair to say this series is over. I don't think a single playoff series or NBA finals has a team that has gone down 3-0 in a series has come back to win it.
Well, it's the way it's happening, too.
Boring. The Celtics are just destroying the Mavs, and I don't know what the final score was last night.
It got very close. It was a really weird swing, wild swing from the third quarter on into the first half of the fourth quarter. It went from being, well, this thing is, it's so quiet here. This is an absolute annihilation in the third quarter to, oh my gosh, they're only down by three. Yeah. And they got the ball. You know, it's like, it shows you, that's the beauty of the NBA is with the 24-second shot clock and the way people can shoot the three. It's always been the case, but you really can't just sit there and say, we got this when you're up by 21 in the third quarter.
Yeah.
It's because the firepower of these teams is real, and it was interesting to watch, I thought. But his thoughts there. Windhorst, remember, number one, is not a hothead that is out there every day going off on somebody like that. Mm-hmm. He picks his spots with that. I think he's a really good reporter. He's very respected. And so if he's doing this, he is armed with a lot of people that are giving him that information behind the scenes, right? Where you can really read between lines and say, he's a great player, but this is what he's got to learn. Because I think there's probably people from the Mavericks camp that are saying, okay, this is what we need from Luka in the long term here, if he's really going to be one of the game's greats. Because I saw what he's seeing there last night. They are really frustrating him. Mm-hmm. They're guarding him as well as anybody's guarded him. And it definitely cost him last night. He let it get to him.
Well, it's not just last night. It's the whole series.
Yeah.
Luka, he plays in such a way it slows everything down a lot of times.
Right, it's so revolving around him.
Because it's so revolving around him, and when he has the ball in his hand, he's a hell of a talent. Mm-hmm. He's a bucket waiting to happen. But sometimes he does slow the game down too much. And when he gets to the hole and he misses shots, he never gets back on defense because he's complaining about a foul. Mm-hmm. Or he's looking at the ref while everybody's running down the court.
Yeah.
He's steady trotting down the court looking back at the refs. It's like, dude, just play. Mm-hmm. They're not – last night's game was physical.
Yeah.
They was physical on both ends. There were some fouls that I thought they should have called for Boston and fouls I thought they should have called for Dallas. They didn't call them. They let them play a lot. So when you know this is the type of game – you can't every time down the court when you're hit or anything else. Yeah, it may have been a foul, but you see how the game's going. And you have become a liability for this team on the defensive end. And you've stopped as much, as good as you are a scorer. Because of what your frustration with the fouls and stuff, you slow the game up. Mm-hmm. You completely slow. When the ball goes in your hand, you slow everything up. And it's killing the Dallas Mavs. And you are a complete – and I mean this when I say it. He's a complete liability on the defensive end. He plays no defense whatsoever. I don't understand it because, to me, defense is a want to. I want to do it. I want to play good defense. Yeah, you may not be as fleet of foot as the next man, but if you want to play, the court's only so big. You can get in front of a person. He doesn't want to play defense. Mm-hmm. He wants to score and give half-ass on the other end of the court. It's evident. Everybody sees it. And it's a shame because he's their number one player.
I'll say this. He kind of looks out of shape to me, too.
Yeah, that too.
You know, but he's always kind of looked like that. Mm-hmm. And
he's puffy.
Look, if we're going to say that now, we should have been saying that when he was just going off in the Western Final and unstoppable. So,
but he had a different
looks
type
the same way.
He had a different type of energy in that Minnesota game.
Well, he did, but yeah, I'm saying is from a body. He looks pudgy, right?
Yeah. He
you're like, wait a minute. This is the guy. Like this, if you didn't know who he was at all, and he walked into just a regular party, you probably wouldn't say that's a sleek NBA superstar.
Yeah,
right there. Be like, is that like? Does he play offensive line or something?
Offensive line,
linebacker.
Is he the blocking tight end?
Blocking tight end. You know, he's 6'7". You know, like that's. So, but you know what I mean? He's not—he's an atypical-looking superstar in the NBA. So that's what makes him great. But I think it is the mindset, mm-hmm. it, more so than the body type, because obviously he's made it work. But there's a play where they're making a run. The crowds get back into it. They cut it. He drives, and it does look like he gets shoved a little bit. Mm-hmm. By, I think it was Tatum that gave him a little bit of a nudge mm-hmm. to push him. He misses the layup. He ends up in the second row, mm-hmm. and he's selling it, right? And he's thinking, oh, I'll get the call here. He doesn't get the call, so what does he do? He just stays there with the photographers and the cheerleaders and whoever gets the chance to sit mm-hmm. under the basket like that. He's very comfortable. And it's a 5-on-4. Like, he's not coming back. They're only down by 3. If they're down by 20, that's maybe a little different. But this is the NBA Finals. You're down by 3. You got to get up and bust it back, even if you're a second or two late. But he gave up on the play because he was mad at the ref. He's just looking over at the ref going, really? What's going on?
He was more aggressive toward the refs than he was in the actual game itself.
It's not even
frustrating.
It's not even Boston's in his head. The refs are in his head.
Yeah.
He's thinking more so about getting fouled, and if he doesn't get fouled, what his demeanor is going to be, than getting back and playing defense. Everybody else is getting back. But this is a trend with the NBA. You know, superstar players, they don't get the fouls a few times, and then they stay back on the other end, and they sit there and they pout and they look at the refs, all while it's a 4-on-5 on the opposite end of the court. It's like you can't, especially in the playoffs.
But what else
you
are they
can't
through?
Do that.
They're trying not to have a game where everybody shoots 40 free throws.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? It is
because it could have been like that last night.
Yes,
it could have been.
And
that
I think they're trying to let the players play. And also say, look, I'm not going to call all the tic-tac fouls. We want to have a free-flowing game here. And if you look at the end of the game, 14 for 16, the Mavs, 13 for 14, the Celtics. That's not a lot of free throws.
Exactly.
No.
That's and not they could have shot at least 10 more
apiece. Luka can't sit around and go, you're not calling anything. They're not calling anything for anybody. Nobody's shooting free throws. It's not
which
just
is a
you.
Shame. Which is a shame, too, because – there was one on Jason Tatum. It should have been an and one. He went up. The dude basically wrapped his hit his arm and his head, and the refs didn't even call anything. It's like, dude, you don't see that clear foul. You got to call it, but they're letting him play. You just got to adapt, and Luka hasn't adapted. Everybody else has adapted around him, but he hasn't.
But
Nobody wants to see you be a crybaby.
Exactly.
And that's what he was acting like last night.
The better team is winning, though.
Exactly.
We have to say the Celtics are really good. I don't think I appreciated them as much. I've always kind of said, well, the Celtics are good. They're kind of there every year. 64-18 in the regular season, and the way they have impressively won – they've had a little trouble along the way, but basically they've got the pieces.
Yeah.
And it's not one guy or two guys dominating.
It's like seven.
It's really a great group. And so we ought to tip our hat a little bit to them.
I just wanted it to be a little bit more competitive. I saw Doncic and Kyrie and Jason Tatum and Brown. I thought those are some superstars. Those are two great duos. I thought Boston was going to win it all along, but I wanted it to at least be a little bit more interesting than this. Hopefully we get a little bit more of an interesting series in the Stanley Cup final side of things. Speaking of that.
That'll be tonight.
We will catch up with Elliot Friedman in 1 hour. Jonathan Hutton joins us coming up next. We'll get Hutton's thoughts on what's coming out from OTAs and minicamp and kind of where Hutton's feelings are at with this Tennessee Titans team now that we are officially in the dead period before training camp in mid-July. Jonathan Hutton coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.